Earlier this hour on Talk of the Nation, we spoke with the highest-ranking officer in the U.S. Army. Our next guest never thought he would find appreciation of the United States Army, let alone spend 4 years at West Point and grow to appreciate the United States Military Academy. If you attended West Point, and if you think it's serving the U.S., today's Army, well or poorly, give us a call. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. David Lipsky joins us from WUNC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. He's the author of the new book, Absolutely American, 4 Years at West Point. And David, welcome to the program.
Oh, Neil, it's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
I know that you were on assignment for Rolling Stone magazine to go to a lot of different colleges and write about them, and the last place you wanted to go to was West Point.
No, exactly. And, you know, for about 200 years, West Point has kind of kept a lid on media when they got on there. And because I really didn't want to do the story, I said, look, the only way I can do this story is if I have complete access to every cadet, if I have complete access to the training, and if I can stay as long as I want. I made that request actually so I could go home.
Yeah, but instead, an offer you figured they had to refuse, yeah.
No, exactly. And instead they said yes, and they said, we have nothing of which we should be ashamed, and we want you to stay as long as you need to get a full experience of what it is to go through West Point. And that was 4 years. So the idea is to give the reader the experience of what it really is like to be a West Point cadet and go all the way through, bad, and different.
You followed the class of 2002.
That's right.
And as you went through this process with them, obviously you wrote about a lot more about their instructors, about the military life and the value systems. But one of the things that you wrote about is that as soon as they went to West Point or arrived there, they arrived in an irony-free zone. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, you know, when you when you and I are talking now, or if I'm talking to the people in Manhattan where I'm from, or down here in Chapel Hill where I'm visiting, you know, I'm listening to what people are saying, and I'm also listening from their tone or from kind of the way they're hitting different words. If they don't, maybe they don't mean it. Maybe it's a joke. Maybe they're saying things they don't quite believe, and they're hoping I'll catch on, which actually can be kind of exhausting. And the great thing about people in the Army is that, and particularly at West Point, is as you heard General Keane speaking just now, they say what they mean. And it takes a lot of pressure, a lot of extra mental work out of talking to somebody. I mean, it's the greatest thing in the world. Someone says, I really want to serve the country. You're not kind of checking their face for a smirk. You think, Exactly.
Yeah. You describe the people at West Point as happier than students almost anywhere else. It's not just that everyone looks incredibly fit. They seem mentally fit, mentally scrubbed. I've never seen less depressed kids. You write, it turns out that dressing like everyone else, sharing identical experiences and being told you're on a mission of importance to the whole country does wonders for the teenage soul.
That's exactly right. I think that, you know, the reason I got drafted by Rolling Stone to be the guy who had to go at first to spend a week at West Point was that I'd been, you know, for the 4 years before going to West Point, I'd been to about 35 different colleges. And, you know, the people, they were having great fun. I mean, a lot of people think of the 4 years of college as like their carnival time. You know, it's like it's their pass to the circus. You can have a lot of fun. You can, you know, hang out with different kinds of people. And I was really sure that when I got to West Point, I'd find kids who were so unhappy to be there, or I'd find people who were happy to be there would be people like almost like animatronic robots from Disney World, people who only would say what they were expected to say. But instead, what I found was the happiest group of kids I'd seen anywhere in the country.
You also did find them using one word in particular with 1,000 different meanings. Tell us a little bit about the word hooah.
Well, it's the easiest way in the world if you want to do an Al Pacino impersonation, because that's the word that he won the Academy Award for. So If you want to do Al Pacino, just go, hooah, and everyone says, hey, that was Al Pacino. It's the basic all-purpose military word. If, you know, I'm in the studio in UNC right now, and if the engineer said, David, get a little closer to the mic, and I wanted her to know that I was doing that, I would say, hooah. It's a way of saying yes. But if she said, you know, your mic's broken right now, and I'm going to have to go in there. The door is broken, so I'm going to have to kick that door in. There's a fire in the ceiling, and there are chunks coming down. I'm going to use my left hand to protect this from the chunks running from the ceiling. I'm going to use my right hand as pliers to fix that mic that's not working. I would say, man, that's hooah.
There are all kinds of kids who go to West Point for all kinds of different reasons. You say some not necessarily because they wanted to be in the Army, but because this was a good free education, or some to play football.
Yeah, the reason that exactly, I was laughing because I looked at the cover of the book when you mentioned football, and the guy on the cover, his name is Huck Finn. He went there to play football. You know, when you bring guys in to West Point, one of the things West Point wants cadets to know is that they're in a different world. They're not in the civilian world anymore. And one easy way to remind people of that their first year is by not letting them use their first names. Everyone gets a nickname their first year. And that guy on the cover, his name was Reed Finn. He was from kind of backwoods Louisiana. So, of course, his nickname became Huck Finn. People go there for every kind of reason. And I heard reasons that range from guys who'd had parents who got really badly torn up in Vietnam to people whose parents were Black Panthers and who went there because they wanted to subvert the U.S. military from the inside. Then they got in, they found the U.S. military to be the most progressive place racially they'd ever seen, and they changed to wanting to keep civilians away from the army to preserve what was so great but what was inside it.
One of the great anti-heroes you write about is a kid named George Rash. Tell us a little bit about this young man and how his experience affected his classmates.
Well, every year at West Point, one cadet comes in who everyone points at and says, I don't think that guy's going to be around by December. And then once a decade, you probably get a cadet like George who everyone points at and says, if he makes it, I bet every bad thing possible that can happen to a cadet at this academy will happen to him. George was just no one's idea of the ideal West Point cadet. You know, he was a tuba player. He wasn't in the great. He wasn't in the best physical shape, and he wasn't great about learning military discipline. And he was someone who the other cadets looked at and said, "Really, this guy just, you know, can. There's no way this guy will get through here." Interesting thing about West Point is you can go through the first 2 years, and if you get kicked out or if you withdraw, there's no penalty. But any year after that, you have to pay back the Army for all the money devoted to your training. And at the end of his third year, the Army, the West Point came to him and said, look, obviously, you're not maybe right for us. We're not right for you. Let's have a no-fault divorce. Everyone walks away clean. You can just leave. And he said no. And because the basic mentality of any cadet at West Point or any officer in the Army is dead or bleeding, you don't quit. And I think that when George turned that offer down, a lot of the cadets began to realize that rather than being an embarrassment to the academy, here was a kid who had every deficit you might have to get through and was pushing past it anyway. And then the cadets began really rooting for him and cheering for him.
We're speaking with David Lipsky about his new book, Absolutely American, 4 Years at West Point. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email TOTN at NPR.org. David, one thing the West Point that you visited in one of the ways it's different is that it has broadened its appeal to try to attract very good students, the kinds of students who would otherwise might otherwise go to MIT or NYU. But that's also forced a change in how those students might use West Point.
Yeah, actually, in a sense, George was one of those kinds of students, too. The drawback is that if you tell prospective cadets, listen, please come in the Army because even if you choose not to do a 20-year career here, you know, this ring that you get will be like a skeleton key. It'll open any door you want to apply for a job inside of. One slight problem is a lot of those cadets take the Army at its word and they just serve the 5 years. They go out, they do great things, they lead people both in combat and in combat support, and they just leave when their commitment is up.
Five and fly, it's called.
Five and fly, exactly. And in a sense, what General Keane was talking about making the Army look more like America, West Point, one of the very cool things to write about in the book is that West Point, throughout the 1990s, and particularly in the second half of the 1990s, all at once, from about the first year I was there, caught up with America. I mean, before, by 1997, there were no telephones in the dorms, there were no TVs in the dorms, you couldn't use instant messages to contact your friends from high school. All those things happened to West Point during the 4 years I was there, and it was fascinating. It was like watching one of those towns in the movies that's like in a little valley and has been living in a different time stream suddenly catch up to the modern world all at once.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Your book has been very well received, I must say, but one of the things it has been criticized for is that you don't write an awful lot about charges of sexual assault. Obviously, we've most recently seen a scandal not at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, but the Air Force Academy. There was earlier one also at the Naval Academy, and these are not unknown at West Point either.
Well, Neil, but the key thing is what you said before. I mean, the reason I didn't write about it in the book, I wrote about other things that that I know West Point's trying to fix, is that those things don't happen at West Point. In a sense, there's a greater weight of history at West Point, and the cadets are aware of it, and that changes their behavior to some degree. And beyond that, West Point made a real commitment early in the last decade, and certainly from 76 on, to really stamping out that kind of behavior. And that's why you don't read about those things happening at West Point.
You think this problem has been solved?
I think it happens. I mean, I think at any college campus, you have 18 to 22-year-old kids, and when you add the fact that it's Friday or Saturday and you add alcohol, I think you're likely to see problems. I think that at West Point, again, I just speak as someone who's been to a lot of campuses, you see that kind of problem far less often. I think to the degree that it can be solvable, since obviously you have unpredictable events all the time, to the degree that it is solvable, it's been solved at West Point, yes.
Let's get a caller. Joe joins us on the line from Philadelphia.
Hey, how you doing? I want to ask you two questions. Number one, I'm Major Joe Dwyer, just back from Afghanistan, and my brother Steve Dwyer, Colonel
sure.
Steve Dwyer, was Regimental Tactical Officer. I wanted
of
to
course.
Know on a personal level, how'd you like Steve?
Steve was a hard guy, and one of the things that a cadet named Jeremy Casper in the book said is, he's great, he's incredibly effective, but man, I would hate to be in his crosshairs.
He loved you, by the way. He thought you were an intellectual who was fair and tough.
Joe, that's great to hear. That's what I was trying to do, and if Steve saw that, I'm happy I was in his crosshairs after all.
And the second question I have for you is...
No, stop there, Joe.
I'm going to build you up even higher because I'm a Temple Penn guy. So, in my family, is the only non-West Point graduate officer. I'm like the liberal commie of the family. And they still love me, though. And you know more what that means than the other guys listening. The GOAT, who is epitomizes the hard work ethic of America... When you see the chain of command fall for the GOAT, and you can explain to the listeners what the GOAT means, because you already did.
Yeah,
they just don't know what it means yet. This particular GOAT you're talking about was the most passionate American-loving patriot that I've ever heard about, from the stories I've heard about him.
Sure.
And absolutely was a misplaced dangling predicate at West Point. Clearly made for Columbia or Harvard or some MIT program. And
yeah,
then
exactly.
He's going to graduate and be a combat officer, leader of America's finest sons and daughters in combat. How do you feel about that?
You know, I think that's, Joe, that's a great question. I know Steve somewhere is smiling, you asking that question.
Oh,
because,
he's cracking up.
Well, I'll remind you, Joe, that Cadet Rash, A, he missed being the GOAT in the same way he missed a lot of things, missed being the GOAT by a few grade, like I think a thousandth of a grade point.
Awesome.
But yeah.
But I think he didn't get.
No, exactly. He missed out. But I think he was proud to be the GOAT is the last member of, it's like the anchor of the class. It's the person ranked at the absolute bottom of each graduating class. And George, who missed everything else, in a sense, missed the $1,000 bonus you get for being at the absolute bottom of your graduation year. but George is in combat engineers, and I think that he stepped up. I think that in every case, the Army made him the leader that they need from him. Do you know what I mean? And so I think that... I think he's learning. I think he's going to do a great job.
Well, I read your book, and you nailed it.
Joe, thanks very much for the call.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Joe. Great talking to you.
By the way, tomorrow's program, we'll be speaking with two other people, debriefing two other people just returned from Afghanistan. That's actually the day after tomorrow. I know it is tomorrow, and we'll be talking with Donatella Lorch and Peter Bergen, both of whom have been reporters just back from Afghanistan. David Lipsky, thank you very much for coming in today.
Oh, Neil, it was great. Thanks for having me on.
David Lipsky joined us from member station WUNC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. He's the author of Absolutely American, 4 years at West Point, and now Irving Berlin's take on the U.S. Army. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.
Oh, how I hate to get up in the morning. Oh, how I'd love to remain in bed. For the hardest blow of all is to hear the bugler call. You gotta get up, you gotta get up, you gotta get up this morning. Someday I'm going to murder the bugler. Someday they're going to find him dead. I'll amputate his reveille and step upon it heavily and spend the rest of my life in bed.